This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
How does it go? Place to Be Nation. Something TTBN. I am your host, Adam Murray, with my co-host, Andrew Weish, who's currently the man about town. Am I right?
Yes. I am one with nature because nature will not let me go. it's like that mean girlfriend. My region's been hit pretty hard by Hurricane Ida. So the ability to actually do like an in-studio recording for myself is an impossibility because there's literally no power, no running water, and nothing else running in my house. So we're just kind of going by the fly here. I could probably do a podcast just talking about setting up this podcast episode, but we don't really have to bore too many people with that. All I need you to know is that I am between a Carter's and a Belk. And that's all I'm going to have to say about that.
That sounds about the same. All you need is a Waffle House and then a Bass Pro Shop, and then I think you're all set.
Oh, no. I can see the Chick-fil-A from across. And then there's a new store called Target. Have you ever heard of that?
Oh, you got fancy French stores, I see.
Yeah, Target. They have like all types of different things you can buy.
Okay, so let's just get into it. The season is all wrapped up. All the chairs have been moved around. We did all the dance. Everybody signed where they could get. Everything sort of closed down fast. Trades happened. Early extensions happened. Quick thoughts about the wrap-up of the free agency.
Yeah, and that's a really good place to start. I'm glad you mentioned that, just because of the fact that like when I had my one big thing moment at the end of the last episode, which I want to say the last regular wrap up, like relevant topic show that we did was probably about 3 weeks ago, which was when free agency was not completely over, like you had mentioned, but it was like getting really, really close. We were getting the teams were getting into the table scraps mode where you're just looking at how much money you can cut so that your luxury tax bill isn't too bad unless you're like Brooklyn and Golden State. and so you're starting to make those minimum deals. You kind of do some dumps here and there. You pick up some two-way players that you like in Summer League. We could talk about Summer League at the end. But the one big thing I did say at the end of the last episode was the fact that it looked like that they were almost looking ahead for the 2022 free agency, because the whole thing was like, okay, we got the big stuff out of the way for 2021, like you mentioned, the offseason. Now let's try to get ahead of the 2022 free agency so that it doesn't bite us in the ass and try to get some stuff wrapped up. And we had mentioned in the last show that they had already gotten big extensions done for like Trae Young, Kevin Durant. I know I'm missing a couple of others. Jimmy Butler was another who got the renegotiated extension, right? And they now have a couple others. One that we knew was coming but it hadn't been put pen to paper from the last episode because the Olympics hadn't been finished yet. And he was competing for Slovenia. Was Luka Doncic. Now, Luka Doncic is the rare example where he got a supermax right out the rookie deal. And people are like, how did he get so much more money than Trae Young? He was all NBA two out of his first 3 years. So he hit the incentive, the Rose Rule.
Yeah, he also just, he earned it completely. Trae just sort of came along really the last year and a half. And not saying he's bad, but it's just Luka came out of the gate just swinging. It was like, oh, wow, this is a whole new level. But as we, with the extensions, we also with SGA and...
Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. There's a couple of others that had been put to rest. If I look at my little sheet here, give me just a second. Julius Randle got one. We mentioned Durant and Butler. Terry Rozier got 4 years, $97 million wrapped up by the Charlotte Hornets. What did you think of that?
that is completely strange, and that's a good precursor to, we have an 8-part season preview series coming up over the next 2 months, really coming at you end of September, early October. We will get into all these teams, but that, yeah, that was a curious signing considering what they have going for them right now. And also, really what held up the free agency at the end was just Lauri Markkanen, who, you know, well, that happens when you have restricted players and the money runs out for everybody. You have to wait and wait and wait. And
yeah, you play that free agency musical chairs. And when the music stops, you know, if the chairs are all filled, it's like that happened to Dennis Schroeder. Dennis Schroeder made a bad negotiation move where he had supposedly been offered a pretty good deal by the Lakers before the season was over in 21, and he turned it down. And then he wound up with pretty much nothing, and he had to take mid-level money with the Boston Celtics.
Yeah, he thought he was worth $100 million. I think the Lakers offered him like 70 or 80. And
4 years, 70, 4 years, 80, and he said no.
Yeah, and nope, and all of a sudden, okay, now you got 1-5. Another person who, when the wheels came off at the end, Dennis Smith Jr.
He got a tryout contract. Like they call it Exhibit 10, but it's basically a 10-day contract.
Yeah, it's just a tryout. It's just a training camp deal with Portland. So that is just, you know, it's pretty amazing for the lottery pick who was the cornerstone of the Porzingis trade, really. You know, plus the 2 first-round picks, but he was the big player that the Knicks coveted. And we're not going to mention Nikolina, who isn't. I think he's just going back to Europe now. He landed absolutely nowhere.
Yes, but sometimes he's lottery / first rounders. It just the bottom falls out quick. Chandler Hutchinson, who we had mentioned in our expansion draft episode, which I hope everybody can listen to. That one just dropped recently. He got thrown into that 5-way deal that it was basically a bunch of deals that were individually made, but to make all the money work, they lumped it into a 5-team deal that involved like Spencer Dinwiddie going to the Wizards and Russell Westbrook going to the Lakers. And Hutchinson wound up with the Spurs, and then the Spurs cut him. And the other one was Cico Dembola, who I think was lottery pick by Detroit.
No, he was the 15th pick. And
okay, so he was right outside.
Yeah, and he fell out of the Detroit lineup, the rotation. And then, I mean, great move by Brooklyn picking him up for DeAndre Jordan. You feel bad for, you know, of course you feel bad for 2 seconds for DeAndre Jordan.
I do not
Jordan.
Feel bad for DeAndre Jordan. He's the one who helped put that whole big three together with Durant and Harden and Kyrie.
But that was the thing is, oh, you know, hey, we're all going to be friends. We're all going to play together. Okay, we're shipping you out. Bye-bye. And he's okay, fine. I'll go join the Lakers and still, you know, make that old team older. So with all the signings that were done, what is the most curious one for you? Like, what were they thinking?
Okay, so when you're saying curious, there's a couple, like, curiosity can mean a few different levels. Like, when I think of it, I can also think of, that's a weird signing, but that might really pay off, almost like when Randall went to the Knicks a couple years ago. The one in terms of, like, what were they thinking, like you just said, it has to be Markkanen going to the Cavaliers. Now, it was a sign and trade so that he could boost his money in order to get his contract to fit with the Cleveland Cavaliers, because the Cavs, as bad as they are, and they are, believe you me, they will still be bad. A little bit improved maybe from last year, but not that much in my opinion. They had to move some money in order to make it work. You know, Kevin Love has not negotiated a buyout, nor I think is he planning to. And then you got Jared Allen for 4 years, 100. So they had to move something. So Larry Nance Jr. got lumped into a sign-and-trade where he went to Portland, and Derrick Jones Jr., who was with the Blazers, he went to Chicago. Now, for Chicago's side, I get that. We already talked in the last episode about how they used up literally, Adam, all the cap space they had, all the way to the bottom of the couch. So they could not add anything without a trade. And getting Jones Jr. to kind of add to the rotation that they already have with like DeRozan and Caruso and Vucevic and Levine, that makes sense. For Cleveland, I don't get it. Like, you just drafted Evan Mobley. You know, he looked okay in summer league. We'll see if he gets his body right as the years go along. You've just got Jared Allen, big money. He's now one of the highest paid centers of the league. And then you throw in Markkanen, who is a big guy, but he doesn't rebound. He doesn't play great defense. He's a good 3-point shooter.
He's a stretch five.
Yeah, but so, the idea, I guess, is to, like, be the yin to the yang of Jared Allen. But Jared Allen is not like this. He's not Bill Russell. He's not like this defensive stopper. Like, I don't understand it.
It's very curious. That is a very curious signing. I would give two. One is no fault of their own. It was sort of, they were sort of held hostage. Norman Powell getting all 5 years guaranteed for somebody
So I'm glad you mentioned that, because once we got done with our wrap up, what happens though is that once that moratorium officially lifts and they actually sign pen to paper, then you start seeing the years, you start seeing the guaranteed money. You don't always know that when you just read it on Twitter when Woj bombs it and you just think, oh man, that's a lot of money. But there, like, for example, we really pissed on Doug McDermott and Zach Collins and Bryn Forbes going to the Spurs. They may still deserve it, but I found out that I think Zach Collins or Doug McDermott's money is like only partially guaranteed and by half. So that's actually not so bad. Full guarantee for Norman Powell. Holy cow. Like, he's good, but he's a little older. And is he going to be worth it at the end of that by 5 years? I don't know. That's a 5-year, $90 million deal.
That's a huge deal, but they had nobody. And, you know, it was sort of, well, this is, we have to do it because we have nobody and we need to appease Dame. The other one I would say is giving extension to Robert Williams, the Time Lord, who I don't know why he's called that.
Because it's Robert Williams the third. Put that Roman numeral on it, Adam. That's your guy.
He's only started like 13 games and has never been healthy ever. So it's a very big gamble on their part, expecting him to be this player when he hasn't shown it yet. So that was sort of curious to give him a ton of money. But in the end, you know, and I'll let you wrap this part up, you can sort of see that all the teams are given extensions and big money now because there's no, you have to equal, nobody else has money left. So you can't be like, well, we have cheap deals. You know, you need to have money to equal their money now since everybody's over the cap. So I can see, okay, let's give Marcus Smart $20 million because we, in order to include him in a deal, we can't include him at $10 million because then we have to add somebody else. So if we make the salary start matching other teams, it evens out.
Yeah, that only works with, like, for example, the first-round picks that wound up being traded when they gave up on, like, that's doable because even though first round rookie contracts are climbing as the years go along with the CBA, the value increasing from the TV deal, it's still a tradable deal. Like, it's something that you can lump in on a bigger deal if you want to, like, make a megastar for megastar type of trade. A guy like Smart, like you said, yeah, you can't do that. Now you really can't do that when you bump him up to 4 years. What is it, like, $70 million or – I might be wrong about that. Is it four years,
70 million, I believe.
Yeah, I'm probably thinking about the Williams deal. The Williams deal is less, but it's a lot of value for a big man who has not shown any offensive improvement. His defense is good. He's a good shot blocker. Stevens must be a fan of his because, as we talked about, Stevens is now the general manager / president. He runs it with Ime Udoka coaching it. The thing that's curious about the Celtics and the other teams too that you had mentioned about the whole, just to wrap up that whole part about free agency and the cap space and what it's going to look like in the future and all the extensions that they're kind of inking up in advance, because of all this advanced payment that's going on across the board, all you're really seeing with in terms of like significant salary cap room in 2022, I think, are three teams. And I think they're, one of them is the Pistons, one of them is the Spurs again, and I don't remember the third one, but they're all
Orlando,
and they're all basically irrelevant in terms of the playoff picture or contending picture. I mean, maybe you'll catch a big fish, you know, that'll say, hey, I'll just take the max money if the Magic offer it to me or the Pistons offer it to me and they want to, like, pair someone else with Cade Cunningham and go for broke. But other than that, like, you really don't have a lot of cap room. The other thing that's curious about just specifically the Celtics is when I glanced at the projected luxury tax bills going into the show, they are in the tax bill just by a little bit. Like, they're paying $10 million in luxury tax, which is basically means you're like a few million over and you can cut some space. But here's what they also did. They brought in Juancho Hernangómez in exchange for Chris Dunn and Carson Edwards. If I'm doing the math right, that means the Celtics are taking on more money in the trade. So I don't understand that. Why are you upping the tax bill? Don't you want to get out of it?
No, it's an even trade. Dunn made $5 million. Carson Edwards was on the third year, so he's probably 6.5-ish, and Juancho is just under 7. So I think it fits within that 15% range.
Okay, so I had a feeling Juancho made more than that, so I'll take that back. But you see what I'm saying? Like, why are you taking a break even trade? Wouldn't you want to get out from the tax? That's what a lot of those teams do when you're kind of starting over, which, in my opinion, that's what the Celtics are kind of doing.
Yeah, but they're not really starting over right now. They're sort of middling because you can see, again, with the previews, both conferences are extremely top heavy. In order to take out Brooklyn or Milwaukee, it's not going to really happen. Only those two teams can take each other out. So it's sort of just, I think the Celtics are running with the, let's not do much. Let's give the coach 1 year with this team. Let's get this little core together. Let's, you know, hopefully Romeo Langford and Williams and all the other young pieces, Nesmith, will, Pritchard, will sort of gel together, and we could grow with Tatum, who is just a complete beast.
Right, and we don't have to get into the nuts and bolts of the team preview specifically for Boston. That's what the preview is for. But the thing is with the Celtics, that's a microcosm of it all. Like we had mentioned before, like, and I think you had made a note of it, that outside of Brown and Tatum, at the beginning of free agency, before any of the deals were signed, it looked like they kind of had it in place where if we can get out from Al Horford's deal, we have a ton of space to add another max slot to go with Tatum and Brown, and maybe we can make our own big three. Well, they sort of nixed that over the month when they decide we want to double down on Marcus Smart. We think he's indispensable. Let's keep Robert Williams the third. Let's let him be the key five in the future. And I'm trying to think of some, like bringing in Juancho, and it just feels like they're doing things that sort of stabilize the roster, and they're not doing the Brooklyn Nets 2019 empty the cupboard, go for broke type of scenario. And that's kind of what we're seeing right now with almost all the teams, Adam. I don't see the empty the cupboard approach. And the reason why is because all the superstars are inking these deals. And when they're putting these extensions in place with the teams they're already with, why would you create max slots for yourself if they're not available in free agents? So that's what I think is the new algorithm in the NBA for all the general managers. It's not, hey, let's do what the Heat did in 2010 and just hope that if we have all the cash space, they'll just come here. Now it's, let's build up some assets so that if they want to leave their team, we can make it work by trading for something else.
Yes, and just, you know, speaking on that, let's move to the 2022 free agency. It's pretty bad, isn't it?
It's bare. Now, let me say this, like, there's two really big ones, but they have asterisks with it, and that's Kyrie Irving and James Harden's opt-outs. So, first of all, number one, James Harden just got a new agent. The thing that's curious about Harden, and we mentioned this before, is that he can opt in and still get Supermax money because his contract was traded in from Houston, and it was already baked in that he had Supermax when he had renegotiated before Houston even traded him. So he might get a little more, but not that much more. Kyrie Irving would get a good bit more if he renegotiated. Do you think that they will get those deals done this offseason?
Oh, of course. They're not going anywhere. The only one who's going to let Kyrie leave is pretty much Kyrie. Harden is going to take as many pennies as he can, and he will be, that contract, whatever he signs, will be completely cancerous by the end of it, sort of like John Wall is currently. But why, you know, this is the, if Brooklyn does win it, who cares? Who cares if you ruin your team down the line?
The other ones that, if we could just throw them around, you got DeAndre Ayton still as a restricted free agent. I don't think that's going to hang up there still. I don't know if the deadline is still October 31st. I think they amended that with the new early start to the season. I think it's like a couple days before the start of the regular season, whatever that is. So that would be, I guess that would be
October
like around
14th.
Right, something like that. I think that's the deadline for upcoming restricted free agents to sign extensions. I got a feeling that Ayton will get that deal. It may be possible, and this could be something to keep an eye on 2022. Mikal Bridges, another potential restricted free agent in 22, he might not get the deal. It might be Ayton gets it, Mikal doesn't. So Mikal's on the market as an RFA in 22. He might get a mountain of an offer sheet. Kevin Werder might be in the same boat. Miles Bridges. Then the big ones that are unrestricted free agents outright, and they have not had their deals renegotiated, even though I think the teams that they're with would love to get a deal put together, is Zach LaVine with Chicago and Bradley Beal with the Wizards.
Okay, so Beal is a whole that most likely will either be a sign and trade, or we'll see how that goes, because he has shown no desire to leave, but he's also shown no desire to stay, because
I think he wants to see what this new version of Washington looks like. Did the Wizards now, we're both optimistic on how they look now versus what they looked like 2 years ago when they had Wall and then Westbrook, but you don't know until you see it. So if the Wizards are a little better than they were that one Westbrook year, and then the Wall years when he was injured and such, like, he might have more motivation to resign. I think he just wants to see it on the court.
Well, that's the word is he's very happy with the Dinwiddie signing, and he did push for it. So that's always a good thing, as opposed to, well, we're getting a big name just because right. we can, and try to spend money because we can. So getting people you want to play with for complimentary pieces is always a good thing. So
yeah.
I'm going to give you some names, and you're going to tell me if they're going to, for their extension possibilities.
Okay.
Okay. Jaren Jackson, is he a max player? Triple J.
Jaren Jackson Jr., first of all, definitely not a max player. I can see him getting something in the vein of, like, definitely more than what Rob Williams III got, but not in the vein of what, like, Trae Young got, who was actually picked, I think, two spots or one spot after Jaren Jackson Jr. So Memphis has to, you know, I don't want to pick on him, but they have to think long and hard about that one for the next few years from their fan base. I would say
Sexton.
Somewhere.
Just
to finish up, 5 years, 100, but I don't think the deal is going to get done by October.
No, I don't. They'll try to play, especially coming off an injury like that.
Right.
Another name who's come up, Colin Sexton.
That one's interesting. I had heard that he might have been lumped into some trades in case they were more bullish on Garland being the star guard, and if they went with Jalen Green, but Green wound up in, as we got closer to the draft, Green went number two to the Rockets, and the Rockets were not going to let him go. So when Mobley was available, he was the consensus, and Cleveland took him. I guess it gave more incentive to keep Colin Sexton around. How much do they like him is really the question that I have, because they are a bad team, but they have so much salary stocked up, and they're going to have it again unless they can get a buyout done with Love. I don't know. I don't want to make it too much about singular about Sexton's deal, but I think it has a lot to do with Kevin Love's deal and whether or not they can get a buyout accelerated so that once it's out of the way and they can dead cap it, then they can give the money to Sexton. How much he's worth is a great question that I don't have a great feel on. If I had to guess, somewhere in the $20 million range, very similar to what Jackson would get. That would be my guess. But I think a deal could actually get done.
Okay. Cleveland doesn't have much money left because they gave a lot.
That is all future projected. And it all, like I said, Adam, it all depends on what they can do with Kevin Love.
Yep. Michael Porter Jr.
No, because they already have to read it. There's already talk that they're going, they're already deep into discussions about an extension with Aaron Gordon, who they got in the deal with involving, who was it that they gave up in their,
RJ Hampton.
Gary Harris. Right.
Yes.
And you forget about Gary Harris because he barely played last year. But, because of the injuries, but I think Gordon's going to get the first the first bite at the apple when it comes to getting some more money on there. And if you look at the Nuggets pickups in the offseason, it was okay. Like some retaining, they let Millsap go to Brooklyn, and they added I think Jeff Green along with Jermichael Green, which will forever confuse me because you got two Jay Greens on the team. But they didn't really like add too much because you already have Murray on max. You already have Jokic. Well, not max, but close. And then Jokic is on max. So you're trying to negotiate something for Gordon that's in the 20s that he's already on. That might be a better idea than jumping headfirst into Michael Porter Jr. Besides, the injury issues are still a concern despite his like progression. I would just take the chance on the offer sheet. That would be my opinion.
And the last guess, Mo Bamba.
Is that a serious question? I think
Straight to qualifying offer.
Who did Orlando get in the draft this year? It was Jalen Suggs and Franz Wagner. Yep. So they already have Jonathan Isaac coming back. He looked very, very good before he tore his ACL in the bubble. So I think they really want to see how he looks.
They have Wendell Carter Jr.
That's what I was going to tell you. You're thinking of the wrong Orlando big man in this case. I think Wendell Carter Jr., if he looks good in training camp and in preseason or whatnot, they might really talk themselves into it. You know, they did the same thing years and years ago with Tobias Harris. Now they immediately turned him into a trade, I think, for JJ Redick or something. It was I don't remember how he got traded. Oh, I remember how. You know how he got traded? He got traded to Detroit for Brandon Jennings, wasn't he?
No, he was part of that big four-team trade where Bynum and a lot of moving pieces in that one.
But anyway, yeah, that was long ago. But basically, I could see him talking into Wendell Carter Jr. saying, you know what, let's give him the money. We don't want to risk losing another young piece because we're already really young. We want to make sure everybody on this nucleus stays together. So I'll actually be the dark horse and say a Carter deal will get done. And
no, I was worth,
I would say 15 a year.
I was just, you know, putting Mo Bamba in there. If you think back to the expansion draft where you just went off on how terrible Mo Bamba was and you exposed, you're like, I don't think we should take him. He's terrible. Orlando doesn't want him. That's just why I threw Mo Bamba in there. Place to Be Nation, Pop Feed, and Wrestling has both the North South connection and the Place to Be Nation have a ton of podcasts for you, just hours and hours of weekly entertainment for you. And I believe, Andrew, you have a new one coming out? Just came out? Just dropped? Dropped it like it's hot?
How did you find that out?
I believe I subscribed to your Twitter feed and it was sort of plastered on there.
Adam, I can't... I know it's hard for me to have to talk to you about it now. I know, but I found a new show. Yes, it's called You Know What That Means, and that is with the North-South Connection, the portion of the Place to Be Nation podcast network, and it's me and Jordan Duncan. We're going to be talking about All Elite Wrestling, pretty much everything AEW, the new hotness, and as we like to joke about in professional wrestling. It's good timing because they're coming off of a pretty big momentum shift with bringing in CM Punk and probably Bryan Danielson to compete against the powerhouse WWE. So we have a whole lot of stuff we can talk to. There's a lot of they've been around for a couple of years, so we have a whole lot of history we can discuss. It's going to be a really fun show. I promise not to talk as much on it as I do on this show. Do I talk a lot on this show?
No, we're used to your monologues.
My musings and my Andy Rooney moments. Yes. But I also did a guest spot. I wanted to also promote, I did a guest spot with on the Jenny Position feed of the podcast where we did the Pluto series where we talked about a show on Pluto TV. And we did Dawson's Creek, a show in the 90s that I did watch.
All right, so check out.
Did you watch Dawson's Creek?
Nope, not an episode, not nothing. Nope.
Okay, we're gonna have to find something on Pluto you and I can watch.
Pluto now. Pluto will
find us back.
Pluto, I go straight to the Price is Right, the Barker era.
Oh, you don't like Drew Carey?
They don't have it on Pluto, but you know, watching the old 1980s Price is Right, I remember watching when I was, you know, in like first, second grade. So it brings back nice memories. But yes, I...
Ever seen the clip of a young Aaron Paul on The Price is Right? Before yes. He was Jesse on Breaking Bad? That is hilarious. He is like so hyped. I am almost sure he was already on meth before he did Breaking Bad.
But Place to Be Nation, folks, check Andrew out and his new wrestling podcast and talking Dawson's Creek. All right, back
yes,
to the
unleash,
show.
Unleash the reach. Okay, well, talking about open evaluations, we mentioned the Summer League. It was a little bit different because obviously I've heard it called the accordion offseason where everything's squeezed in because it's shorter. It's not shorter by a ton, by about a month and a half. But they had a, they did have a shorter summer league. They had one in California. They had one in Las Vegas. They had like what, three games in Utah. And so, but they did have a little bit of a sample size. What did you think in general? And I'll kind of give my take on it. We'll kind of get the summer league out of the way.
It's always overrated. I used to love to watch it because you see rookies and that they're never going to get those minutes. Always, oh, well, who's this late first round pick? What can he do? But you're watching it. If you, you know, you think back of, you know, Nate Robinson has his number retired in the summer league. His jersey's on the rafters. And like Nicholas
Selby. Josh Selby is on the all time summer league.
Yeah, Nicholas Healy would tear it up. And, you know, all the bums who wound up, you know, flunking out had good summer leagues because they're playing against people who are just summer camp roster invites. They're not even, you know, training camp roster invites. These are people who are going off to the European lower leagues. Just, oh, well, it's a paycheck before I go. It's a sort of just a, you know.
But it did have some value, though, because of the fact that we didn't have one in 2020. So we did see something like, what did you think of the first, the one that I, that was actually the summer league, and he was like the co summer league MVP along with Cameron Thomas, who was from LSU and he got picked by the Nets, because he averaged 27 points a game. He was just taking everything that he had. But the other guy who's co MVP that I was high on going into the draft and I still think might be good, despite the fact that they have so many guards now, is Davion Mitchell with the Kings. Was there any first rounders there that kind of like wowed you?
No, it was just sort of par for the course of the basketball is not good basketball. So yeah, Cam Thomas takes up, you know, 27 points, but he's just jacking up terrible shots. Nobody's running any plays. It's like watching, you know, preseason NIT with two mid-majors.
To be fair, that's how Cam Thomas plays. So I saw him at LSU for an entire year, local guy. So when I saw him, I was like, oh, he's going to be right at home in summer league. They're going to give him every shot and he ain't going to be afraid to take him, but he's talented. I mentioned Mitchell. He was really good on both ends. He's not going to wow you with the stats. He's just like an intangibles guy. Cunningham looked good. Jalen Green looked awesome. Absolutely awesome. He looked worth the pick. I'll say that.
Because he was the only person who was really, you know, playing and trying.
He was in the D League. Yeah.
You could tell the difference. Yeah, I mean, that was basically the G League competition in there. So you could see those who were sort of trying and those who were just sort of, you know, running to get into shape and sort of learn things. So I always take it with a grain of salt. It's just more of those. It's fun to see. And if you really go into the depth, who really rocked the summer league, those are, you know, they don't know. It's sort of overrated.
Well, I'm like, also, when you have those guys who are rookies, but they played a lot off the bench and got a little shine every now and then, they go into the summer league and they just beast, like Tyrese Maxey, Emmanuel Quickley, Desmond Bane, a favorite of yours, Peyton Pritchard. Like, they look great. They only played a few games anyway, but they look good in summer league just because, I mean, Adam, they've gotten a lot of blow in the NBA. Not, they haven't started, but they know how it goes. So when they go into the summer league and they're playing scrubs and college free agents, of course they're going to school them. So it was kind of fun watching that. Disappointments, you know, Obi Toppin and Jalen Smith, those were the ones that kind of like stood out that didn't really develop out of the 2020 lottery. And we kind of saw a little bit of the same in Las Vegas. I don't see the development of their games. Franz Wagner, he needs to work on his shooting. And I'll give it an incomplete to Mobley. Like, Mobley had some bad moments, but he had some good ones too. So it's hard to say sometimes with summer league, but there's a few of them. And Sharif Cooper, who we had talked about at the end of our draft recap episode, he looked good.
Okay, so now that we've put a bow on the past season and we got the previews coming up next, any final thoughts to bridge it?
I wanted to ask you about the vaccination issue going on now. The FDA actually obviously has approved the Pfizer shot as, and the reason why that's important for like the private entities and corporations like sports leagues is that when the FDA approves the drug, it's considered by that body as quote unquote safe and effective. So what you can do now is because you have the FDA backing you up as being safe and effective, they can throw that into their policy and say, hey, you need to get vaccinated. And there's no ands, ifs, or buts about it. You can't sue for saying that it's unsafe because the FDA said it is. It is. For this case, like, it feels like the NBA is almost like the NFL, where they're dancing around it, but they're making it a little harder for unvaccinated people to either risk an outbreak within their team or to just not get it, because it's just like a lot of these corporations where they're making it harder if you're unvaccinated to go through the protocol. You got to get tested every day. You have to wear an N95 mask. You can't go out. You have to be monitored, blah, blah, blah. I don't want to get through the political discourse about it, because that's just not our place. But I do want to ask you, how do you feel about the progress or the advancement that they've gotten into with the vaccination, where it looks like the non-player personnel are almost entirely required to get it, but the players, even though they're not necessarily being required, they're being very strongly encouraged, and also forfeits might be on the table. Like, so first of all, what do you think of that? And do you think there's even a remote risk of forfeited games?
No, I don't think so. And we had mentioned it in one of our rants at the end of some episode. The only way things will change is if they start making it really hard on people, because they're not going to force it. And, I guess the stats are say that like 90% of the NBA is vaccinated. So there's only like 40 or so players. But I would be extremely offended.
Like Lane Kiffin for your Ole Miss said his team was 100% vaccinated. And the day of the game, he got coronavirus. So, but let's be clear, and we have to always let people know this. You can definitely get vaccinated and still get the virus. The infection's not as severe. So, I mean, that's the part that. But when people see that, they just see, oh, he got infected, so it doesn't work. Well, that's not what
he has COVID. Therefore, either A, he's going into the hospital and be on a ventilator, or B, it doesn't work. But if I were part of the training, the whole point is to sort of demote that player who's not getting vaccinated of, well, you can't fly with the team. You have to fly in the back with the training staff.
And that's what I was trying to get to. That's where it's kind of getting to. The only ones that are super unique is where, I mean, let's call a spade, where the very stringent COVID protocol states like New York and California, they have different rules, and they don't necessarily give exemptions to athletes. So what happens is, if you play a home game, the player at that home team has to be vaccinated. And that counts, I believe, for the Warriors in Santa Cruz or wherever that county is, and Brooklyn and the Knicks. So, I mean, that is kind of interesting. The only thing that's funny about Brooklyn is that I'm almost entirely sure all three of the big three got COVID at least once in the last year.
It sounds like, just listen to them, they all got COVID like five times.
Right. Well, Kevin Durant had a contact trace turn up literally in the final moments of a game, and he had to be pulled out. Here's the thing. That was funny it's almost funny in that asterisk type of, yeah, that was fucking weird type of COVID era. You don't want that to happen every year. That's what I'm trying to get to. Like, is there a new normal in that case with the vaccination?
No, that's why they're saying if you're not, you won't have to be, there'll be no tracing, no testing is really loose. So basically they're just trying to make it hard on those 40 or so odd players. And there's, for people who make big money, they're not going to try to jeopardize it by, well, I'm not going to get vaccinated.
And they also don't want to jeopardize lost games, which I don't think is on the table this year. That's the one change that we can finish up with, is that, like, for example, like, one of the things that a lot of people use on season previews like ours is that they do win over unders, which came out, I think, about a week or a half ago. I think Brooklyn is in the lead. Would you agree with that one?
Yes.
On the wins over unders? Okay. But, like, for example, if you have to compartmentalize the games because you have canceled games due to COVID, not necessarily forfeited ones, then it's more like, for example, if you don't enforce a forfeiture, then you're more likely to have canceled games because it's like, we just got a canceled game. It's not an L. Well, if it's an L, like, this is where the NFL situation is much more interesting. You forfeit your game if you have an outbreak.
Players don't get paid, yeah. So there will be, and
consequences for it.
I guess Tennessee Titans are still back in all-star Tennessee form just like last year.
Yeah, didn't they have a weird stretch in the middle of the season where they had to play on a Tuesday because they could not.
Yeah,
because
they had like 15. They were the first case of we need to reschedule games because the Titans can't do anything. All of a sudden, preseason. Oh, look, the Titans have another outbreak. What's the odds of that happening?
But yeah, and there's a lot of HIPAA protection involving superstars, especially in the NBA. So you don't always get the full story. All you can look at is how it is the reschedulings. And it looked like the teams that really got hit the hardest were some of the Texas teams like Dallas and San Antonio. But the one that got hit the hardest was Washington, the Wizards. That was the one that was, I think they missed like 2 weeks straight of games.
Yep. And that brings an end to this episode for us. We have, again, eight episodes of previews for next year. So.
Oh, we'll be around. I don't know if I'll be around sounding like this, wandering around trying to find the closest Longhorn Steakhouse, but I'll be back. Unfortunately, I'll be back. Ida didn't kill me yet.
For Andrew Reich, I'm Adam Murray. Have a good one.
See you later.